Dawn and Keith Waltemeyer of Treeland Nurseries. If you'd like to join the conversation, it's 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE4U. As we bring Dan and Glendale into the conversation, Keith, tell us about when I was lining this broadcast up. I was talking to Cheryl Gore of the Arizona Nursery Association, and she was bragging you up pretty hard.
Well, basically,
you're either a really good test taker or the person next to you cheated off.
Right. Maybe a little bit of both. But every year the Nursery Association does certification for nurserymen, and I happen to get the highest score this past year. But a lot of it is attributed to just doing what I've done my whole life. So it was just kind of a test of what I do on a daily basis, multiple times a day. So it wasn't too difficult, but it is what it is. I'm proud of myself.
Congratulations. And a lot of nurseries have their own little specialty. You've got Berridge that does a lot of flowers. You have Elgin out in the West Valley that has a big growing facility. You've got Sunrise as well. It does Treeland Nursery. I hear tree, and I kind of assume that y'all may be a tree specialist.
That's what we really do specialize in, but we grow every desert type plant that we can in the valley. We really try to grow all of our plants in the conditions that the customer needs to put them into, and I really recommend people ask about where they're putting their plant so that they know to put the right plant in the right spot. But our real specialty is probably the bigger trees, and we do grow a lot of citrus ourselves, and just a lot of desert, adapted material as well.
What's your favorite, and I know it's probably a loaded question, but what's your favorite native desert tree?
Overall, I'm really partial to the Sonoran Palo Verde, the Cercidium praecox. It's just a beautiful structured tree, and it doesn't have as many problems as some of the other Palo Verdes do with wind damage.
And y'all have been talking off air since y'all got here just about watering.
Yeah, we get we talk to people multiple times a day just to, with automatic drip systems because that's what we do here. And people just, a lot of people, a large majority are watering just, too often with not enough water. The main thing we'd say is on drip systems, they're meant to run in terms of hours, not just 10 minutes or 15 minutes. It's a slow drip, and it takes a while for that soil to take on that water. So, running multiple hours, 1, 2, 3 hours, depending on the tree, the shrub. Just once a week or twice a week is okay, even in the summer, not every day. A lot of people have high water bills because they're watering every day when it's 110 out. But our soil just doesn't dry out that fast. It's clay. It holds water fairly well.
And really recommend more water, less often.
Yeah.
More water, less often.
Yes.
And that's hard to do sometimes. I don't know that there's ever a guest we've had on this program that says, you know what? People just water perfect in the desert. No one ever says that. They always, especially in this hour, people don't know how to water, 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 water.
Well, we do live in a desert, and if they put a good soaking to it, it should go 5 to 7 days, even when it's hot, between waterings without too much trouble.
And what's hard, I think, for a lot of people is you can get 2 or 3 days into that, and if you didn't do a long soaking before, those plants look pretty weathered pretty quick.
Yeah, if they're doing
your temperature jumps above 112, there isn't anything out there that looks good. It's not going to look good.
Right. And those people, exactly. 15.
But it's not
water. You don't look good out there.
It's not water.
Yeah.
It's things will sunburn. Things won't, they just don't like that. When it gets that extreme, it is hard on a plant. And the water doesn't make a difference.
1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE4U. Dan, go ahead with your question, sir.
A couple of weeks ago, I had a tree in my front yard fall over. It's about a 6 or 8 inch diameter on the trunk, and I stood it back up. But now I was wondering, is there anything I should do to fertilize it, feed it, to help it come back and not die on me?
Well, Dan,
I think they're both trying to decide who's going to break the bad news to you.
Who's taking this? No, I mean, if the general health of the tree looks okay, I mean, you'll know fairly quickly if it how severe it was, if there was any root damage. You'll know within the next couple weeks. So keep an eye on it. As far as fertilizer goes, there's products out there like Super Thrive that that are just bunch of vitamins and hormones concentrated that can help a plant that's in shock. So things like that could be beneficial. Beyond that, yeah, just, you know, water normally, get it staked up, staked properly, so it doesn't happen again, hopefully. And prune, you know, if needed, if there's a lot of top head weight in the tree.
And that top head weight's important. Rosie was mentioning earlier, if he doesn't shed his water off to his mesquite trees, the trimming, just the amount of material you have to trim back
is a lot
huge.
Of, you know, these mesquites, Palo Verdes get so large so fast with regular drip water that because the water's there that, a lot of people just can't trim them on their own. It can be a costly expense. You know, if you cut back the water in an established tree, you know, it'll still survive, especially with when we have a rainy summer like we've had. So, the water, you know, doesn't need to be there necessarily every 3 days.
And also if they... As a tree matures, they need to move their drip systems out to the drip line of the tree more so that the feeder roots get that water, and it anchors itself better into the soil, so it won't blow over.
I'm just right up to the point at my house where I'm going to just turn the station off that waters my trees. All my trees are indigenous. Most of them are volunteers that I just dug a well around and said, "Okay, baby."
Yeah.
At my house, if you're a plant, you either got to make it on your own because you aren't going to get a lot of help from me. And these trees are now 20, 30 feet tall, and I'm spending thousands of dollars a year trimming them. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying, let's slow the growth down. These are the plants that have survived in the desert for hundreds of years without an irrigation
system.
Without
a drip system, yeah.
So I'm getting
ready. You've got your shade. You've got your canopy.
They're all the size I want. I'm turning them back to nature. Well, will I put them into shock?
Not at all. We've had some good rain recently. But going into this time of year, as things start to cool down, the plants start slowing down. They're not using nearly as much water. So, yeah, it's, naturally they're going to use less. So you giving them less, they're going to be okay.
No, but I'm talking about turning the station off for permanently, for good.
Well, the only time I would tell you to maybe kick it on or throw the hose out there would be if we had a really dry summer and no rain. And, you know, the tree won't die on you right away, but you'll start to see it probably, you know, thin out, put on as much growth, which is okay.
You could just turn the clock or turn your station off. Next year, if we go 114 and it doesn't rain for 60 days,
give it a shot.
Turn it on for 24 hours and...
Well, the other thing you were talking about, and we were talking about Dan's blown over tree, you used a term proper staking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think we ought to talk the folks through that.
Sure. There's a lot of ways to stake a tree, but, you know, usually people are using, you know, tree stakes or lodge poles. If the tree's large, like Dan had, it's a guy wire system where you'll drive some anchors into the ground with, you know, braided wire. High tension strength wire that will be able to hold the tree up. Some people put rebar in the ground. There's any number of ways, but you know any way to keep the tree upright is really okay, as long as they're not wrapping it with a wire or and girdling the tree where they're cutting into it. If you do that, you know, put a piece of carpet or through an old piece of hose, something to protect the tree itself.
Let's bring Diane into the conversation, calling from Cottonwood. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Well, and your question?
I have about a 30-year-old pine tree. I don't know what kind it is. And it's very close to my gas meter. And I live in an HOA where they're cutting down all the pines. Their first reasoning was that they were too close to the septic tank. This one's farther away. And they said, well, it's too close to the gas meter. And my thinking is the damage probably would have been done at 30 years old. So I called the gas company to find out if they had any concerns or if there were any notations. And they said no. So anyway, I'm trying to save the tree. I don't want them to cut the tree down, but I also don't want my house to blow up.
I don't either. That's a tough one. I think that's... between the HOA, the gas company, yourself, I, I, I don't think your house is going to blow up myself, but that's something that you got to probably work out with them.
That's something. The extent of tree law is incredible, and it may, Diane, take a certified arborist or someone that understands tree law. You can get those contacts through the Arizona Community Tree Council's website, and we'll get that for you here off the air, actc.org. You're really just going to need somebody that knows tree law, and it could be the utility company just not wanting to, you know, preventative maintenance. That route may never do anything to that gas line ever, but they may have had the problem 2 miles down the road, and they said, well, instead of running into this again, we're going to take down every tree that affects our gas line. But do they have the right? Do they don't have the right? Who has the easement? If you really want to save it and you have the time, it's probably going to take someone familiar with tree law. Again, that's actc.org, can get you in contact with someone in your neighborhood for that. Let's bring Tom into the conversation and talk about olives. Good morning, Tom.
Hi. Yeah, I've got an olive branch tree in the back of my house. A couple of people have been out over the years to look at it, and they both say it's the biggest olive branch tree they've ever seen. So for that reason, we stopped spraying it because they couldn't get to the top to stop the olives. This last storm that went through, I lost about 4 or 5 big limbs all on one side, and I had a guy tell me that I had root rot. Now, does root rot for the whole tree or just parts?
The root rot typically is going to affect the entire tree over time, but did the tree die back? Because the verticillium wilt is one of the diseases the olives get, and Texas root rot is very common in our area. I would think that the entire tree would probably start struggling if it was one of those two diseases.
If this was your tree, what do you think?
Well, this time of year, if you know, there's definitely olives on the tree. That extra added weight, it's, you know, a lot of big dust storms blowing through, high winds. I think it may be attributed more to that than anything.